You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way because you are listening to the movie show.
What is up?
What is going on in Hollywood?
Lots is going on in Hollywood. But you know, there was once upon a time.
In Hollywood.
Once
upon a time.
Yeah.
Sounds like a story.
I know, right? Once upon a time in Hollywood, there was an actress and her name...
Wait. They made a movie about this, didn't they?
They did.
Oh, is this the film we're doing it on?
This is the film we're doing it on. But before we get there, this is the movie show on Active FM. I am Sash.
And my name is Ryan.
And we're doing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
All right, so this film was made and directed by...
Can I just... Ryan, I... Okay, my heart is so full. You know, I've been complaining how the movies this year have sucked. Yeah. It was so refreshing to watch a movie that is a proper film. This made my heart happy. I'd actually watched this, so it came out in 2019. It's a 2019 film, and I watched it in 2019, and... We'll get to the storyline now, but I was like, what? The storyline, like, freaked me out. But I didn't know the background behind it, so, like, now that I understand
the
background...
Wait, the storyline freaked you out? Like, okay, while you were watching it, were you freaked
out? No, the ending. The ending, I enjoyed it, and then the ending, I was just like, huh? But we're going to get to that. But then watching it again, so I watched it this time knowing what happened. Oh, it was beautiful. The little things that Quentin Tarantino does, the everything from like stupid things. Like, I don't know if you noticed in the beginning of the film, Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt get into the car. Brad Pitt's on this side, Leonardo's on this side.
Yeah.
But then the titles that come up that show their names,
they
swap. So I was just like, that's Quentin Tarantino for you. Right there. I appreciate, honestly, Quentin Tarantino. I feel like him and Guy Ritchie are my two favorite directors. I'm actually giving it to them. Like, Quentin maybe more so. I feel like I want to watch... I'm going to do a test. I'm going to watch Guy Ritchie films and Quentin's films and then be like, okay, my final decision is... But this movie was stunning. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I even loved the credits.
Yeah. I enjoyed the film as an it was such an awesome experience for me. I literally felt like I was in Hollywood in the 1960s.
Right, the 1960s. Mm. Okay, so just to give you background, I personally feel like I wish I had known the back, or because this is actually based on a true life event, which Quentin Tarantino often does. But I wish I knew the true life event before watching it, just because I think I would have not had the reaction I had to it, because I wasn't expecting the ending to be what the ending was. So when it happened, I was just like, what? Why did we do... Why would you even go there? But then realizing, I was like, oh, it's actually... So to give you background, right? This whole film is actually based on the murder of an actress named Sharon Tate, who was murdered in the 1960s. And she was murdered by what was known as the Manson family, which wasn't actually a family. It was actually an occult of like hippie type people who wanted to be in a band. And then there was a guy named Terry who he basically didn't give them the record deal. And then in revenge, they knew that Sharon Tate and her husband had moved into Terry's old house. So he wasn't staying in the house the original guy thought he was staying in. But they decided to go ahead with the murders anyway, and she was actually murdered. It was actually it was horrific. The murder, for me personally, it was a satanic sacrifice, just because they stabbed them more times than necessary. Like, they didn't need to be stabbed. Like, they were dead, and they kept stabbing them. And then they took the blood of Sharon Tate and wrote on the wall, I think, death to pigs or something like that, but they actually wrote it in blood. And she was pregnant at the time. She was 7 months pregnant. So, like, literally, for me, it was just a satanic sacrifice, like blatantly, but obviously it was very horrifying. But now what Quentin Tarantino did is, and he often does this, if you look at his other movies as well, he does this. He takes a very dark moment in history and alters it and almost corrects historical wrongs by providing a Hollywood-style happy ending. So if you look at all of his films like Django Unchained, which was based on all of like the slavery that happened to African Americans, if you look at like Inglourious, the men that were born out of wedlock, that was obviously the whole Nazi regime thing. But what he'll take a historical event that actually had a very tragic ending, and he'll give it a Hollywood-style happy ending. And yeah, so with this, she actually doesn't die in the end. Sharon Tate's the character Sharon Tate doesn't die. Instead, he brings in two fictional characters, which are Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt's characters, and they step in and kind of like save the day. But their characters, even though they're based on actual actors at the time, so like Leonardo DiCaprio's character was based on, you know, the Western style, yeah, like those type of actors, and even Brad Pitt's stuntman, he's based on an actual person. They're fictional characters within the story, so they were never there, and that's hence why Sharon Tate got killed and murdered. But just the way he tells the story, and the his decision to do that, I was just like, I loved it. Knowing that now, I love it even more. That's why I'm saying I wish I knew about her murder when I watched it, because then you would have watched it expecting her to die. Mm. So you're like, ah, okay, she's gonna die. That's Sharon Tate. And then at the end, you're like, yeah, I wish that actually happened. But I didn't have that experience, unfortunately, because I didn't know. So I was like, what the hell happened here?
Sounds like a very similar experience I had with Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, because during the film, I'm just like, what the heck? And then afterwards, you find out, you're like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense.
No, but so this one is different in that it's only the ending that got me. So the rest of the film, I was like, this is beautiful. Because the ending, yeah, the film like goes and it's going and it's going. And then suddenly the ending's just like, what? And also, it's very bloody and gory and like very blood. And that is Quentin's style. So watching it, I was just like, ugh. And also, what I saw a review where the guy actually said the murders of Sharon Tate were very gruesome. They were very gruesome. So by flipping it and having the people that actually committed the murder being murdered in that gruesome manner was kind of, it was his way of like fixing the wrong that was done.
Yeah.
But it was very bloody. And when Brad Pitt takes the chick's head and I was just like, ah! Yeah. It was very intense.
I had to watch this film by myself. Yeah. Because we started the film. The language is absolutely not great. Especially parts where characters get upset.
Angry.
When their emotions climb. And then more swearing comes out. And there are times where the swearing is unnecessary. So then I was just like, okay. So then I there was an agreement that I made with my wife to watch it by myself. And they were okay with that. And I enjoyed it by myself. Yes.
I think the swearing for me is the only bad thing about the film. Like, I can't actually... I enjoyed everything else. I do think, though... I'm not saying I agree with the swearing. I just think it's very... realistic to the industry, because it's telling you a story about Hollywood and actors. It's not the pretty things you see on screen. It's the life behind all of that. And like, I know they go to the Playboy Mansion, and I mean, there's so much that happens there, like so much injustice that has actually happened at those parties. And so like, I just think I think they candy coated even what goes down in and behind the scenes of like Hollywood, for example. I don't know. I don't think it was any better in the 60s than it is now.
The experience that I enjoyed about this film was the whole Hollywood scene.
Yeah.
They did an exceptional job at getting back the Hollywood, putting the 1960s Hollywood.
And I think that is because of Quentin. Mm. Like that, honestly, Quentin, so just to give you some background as to Quentin Tarantino as a director, right? So he has he's been making films since the year 1992. That's when his first film came out as a director. I'm talking now his directorial career.
Yeah.
So in 1992, his first film came out. That was Reservoir Dogs. So he's been making films since 1992. That's a long time ago, right? That's like, what, like 30 years now. So he's been making films for the last 30 years. How many films do you think a director can make in 30 years? You know, like we've seen, like, I don't know, like they can, you can do a lot in 30 years, right? Quentin Tarantino has only made 10 films. In his, since 1992, he's only made 10 films, which for me, number one, immediately straight up shows he's not in it for the money. That's not his reason for making movies. Obviously, it comes with it, but he's there for passion, and he will spend as much time necessary as possible to bring his vision to life in the best possible way possible, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, like, his respect for whatever he's doing, whatever story he's telling, he respects it greatly, and he wants to, you know, do whatever he can. So, for example, with this movie, he spent 5 years writing the script. 5 years.
Sure.
Writing the script. Nothing else. Not pre-production, not story, but writing the script. The script. Yeah, that. The thing that, you know, they'll quickly get done in, I don't know, like half a year, 6 months. 5 years. He spent five. And also he writes his own scripts.
Yeah.
He's so into, like, everything. So I think that's why, number one, I love him.
I think it said written and directed.
Written. And it's always the case with him.
Yeah.
So this is his latest project as to date. So this was brought out in 2019. We haven't had a film from Quentin Tarantino since. I really hope he's going to make another one. Because I saw an interview with Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt where the interviewer said, how do you feel if he only makes 10 films, you were in the 9th of the 10th film, if you understand. No, actually, they were in the 10th. Yeah, they were in the... Do you understand? It's like the final... So I'm really hoping, like...
Well, I was thinking about just in this film alone, I was looking at all the sets, the setup,
And it's like 3 hours long. Mm.
So that alone is very time-consuming, the organizing, the arranging, the shooting. And, you know, a shoot doesn't go 100% smooth, you know. You don't, like, shoot in real time. You sometimes do quite a couple takes of a specific shot. I love in the film when it, like, kicked into the movie mode.
Ah!
I love the way they did
it. It was beautiful.
And it wasn't like a warning. There was no warning. It wasn't like, okay, let's get ready, guys. And action.
No.
It would be like the actor would be sitting there, and the next minute, bah, you see them driving. The only way that I recognize that they're in the film now, I think, was the coloring, and I think was you didn't see any equipment.
Yes.
And you see him walking.
And also, like, the music was very precise.
Yes.
Like, you could hear, and even how they...
And then just out of nowhere, it's like, sorry, what was my line again?
Do you know? Okay, wait, can we please talk about that scene? So that scene where Leonardo forgets his lines wasn't originally written like that, and Quentin Tarantino is not a director for improv. He doesn't like improv. Makes sense.
Oh, really?
Ryan, you spent 5 years on a script, now a little dweeb actor comes. Can I change? No. I spent 3 years on that line. No, you will say it exactly.
Oh,
do you get what I'm saying?
Wow.
I understand where Quentin's coming from. Okay. I get you. For all of those writers out there that are like, yeah. So he's not big into improv.
So
but
not even if it, like, adds on to his...
So his, what they did with this scene is they actually filmed it twice. They filmed it the way it was originally written. So Quentin got what he wrote, basically. And then Leonardo basically said, can I forget my lines? Because he felt like, as an actor and in,
and especially,
you know,
for the
characters, yes, because he's drunk, stage, his career's, like, failing, he's got a really bad self-image, it's like, really, like, he's at a really big low in his life, and he was like, for me, it makes sense for him to forget his lines, because he spent, like, the whole night drinking, type, even though he learned his lines, he was drunk, etc., etc. So they then did it, and that was completely improvised by Leo. Like, the whole thing was improvised by Leo. Even the scene afterwards when he goes to his trailer and, like, gives himself the pep talk of his life. And in that scene, before I continue, when he talks to himself in the mirror, I loved how he didn't talk to himself. He actually spoke to the camera. Because his reflection was looking at the camera. I was just...
And it didn't... It didn't make sense, the angle.
No, but it made sense.
But you like...
It was like, this is what I'm talking about. This is like, this is Quentin Tarantino at his best. So that was completely improv on Leo's side. But it was... And obviously Quentin went with it because, like... like, it was so good. So I think he does, he's got respect for the story, and yes, if it's going to improve it, yes, but he's not just going to be like, you know, I think he will still film what he originally wrote, and if he feels that he is better,
Cause
but that scene was insane. It was so good.
The camera angles, the chops, the changes, yes, all of that.
And the way I loved when they stopped, the camera then went back.
And they retook. And
did you hear the sound effects? You could hear the equipment squeaking when the camera was going back. Yes. But in the actual take, there was silence. It was, so even that detail, like, it was so cool. It was brilliant. Mm. That whole sequence was so good.
Leonardo DiCaprio's, I must say, this has been the best. I've seen him.
His acting in this is brilliant.
It was at the point that I didn't recognize Leonardo DiCaprio. His accent, the way he spoke, there was now and then where there was sort of like this bit of a slip of Leonardo DiCaprio in his vocal tone. But it, like, even his vocal, like, it reminded me of like a real Western actor.
Mm.
And how strong his American. It was just...
No, he was so good. Oh, and he played... Word. The thing is, he was also playing different roles within the film, because he was an actor, and he wasn't a very good actor. His actual character itself wasn't actually... That's why he didn't make... His character was kind of like, yeah, you know, he had to go do spaghetti westerns in order to, like, up his career, but type of thing. Mm. So he, in itself, the character itself wasn't a good actor, but then he had to play, like, this actor's different roles. So it wasn't just playing the bad actor, or not bad, but like failed actor in a way. He was now playing the, and it was so good. He was so good. Yeah. Yo, he was brilliant.
I'd definitely say, I'm just thinking about Brad Pitt's acting as well. I had to quite a couple times remind myself, this is Brad Pitt.
Yes.
This is Brad Pitt.
Oh.
And he's just so chilled, and the way that, like, he's just going along with things. And,
even like the way he drives differently with Leonardo DiCaprio's car to his car. Yeah. Like, you even see, like, it was so good. Mm. And honestly, the acting was, even Margot Robbie's acting. Can I just say, I know... Personally, she's not one of my favorite actresses. Like, I'm not big, especially because, like, also the roles she plays sometimes. Do you know she's Barbie in you know, the Barbie, the live-action Barbie film?
Really,
she's playing Barbie. And after watching her performance again in this, I'm like, okay, you know what? I actually do want to see. Margot Robbie is a good actress. She's got a very wide range. But just the way she played Sharon Tate as this, she was so nice. And she was so, like... genuine, and
she didn't do a lot of talking. She did.
That's the insane part.
There was just a lot of like.
But also the fact, like, people also slated her screen time. They said she had too little screen time. And I personally don't. I think what Quentin Tarantino did with the whole thing was he honored the actress that Sharon Tate was. In fact, her sister, her actual sister, apparently her shirt had two wet spots because of how much she cried when she watched the film. And she said she literally felt like for the first time in 50 years she had her sister back. Mm. That's how good Margot Robbie was with the role. But she was brilliant. The scene in the cinema with her watching herself was so...
It was enjoyable.
So good. Mm. It was so good. And I don't know, for you, like... It's a thing with Quentin Tarantino. If you watch his film, you are going to see female bare feet. That is a thing.
Yeah.
You are literally... So, like, on the windscreen with the hippie, but then also in the cinema with Margot Robbie.
With her feet as well.
And I don't know if you noticed, her feet were dirty. I don't know if you picked that up.
I want to talk about the hippie, but...
No, not her, not the hippie, Margot Robbie in the cinema.
Oh, I didn't notice
her feet were dirty, right? Now, the reason why her feet were dirty is actually because in real life, Sharon Tate didn't like wearing shoes. She really didn't enjoy wearing shoes. Yeah. She, like, if she could not be wearing shoes, she wouldn't have been wearing shoes. Apparently, she didn't like wearing shoes so much that she would wear rubber bands on her feet to give the illusion of wearing sandals while eating out at restaurants.
Oh, that's crazy.
So, like, even that, her feet would then be dirty. Because I was still like, she's wearing white boots.
Yeah.
Why are her feet dirty?
Yeah.
But, like, the attention to detail to character was so good.
I was going
to
say, the thing that Quentin got right is his amount of research that he actually, like, the detail that he put into this entire film, you know, and that's probably what brought each character to life, and it's probably what made Brad Pitt and Leonardo such good actors is because they weren't playing Leonardo, they weren't playing Brad Pitt.
No.
They were playing those characters.
Yeah.
Because I know that in the one interview that I saw with Quentin and Leonardo DiCaprio, Quentin said to Leonardo, go check out this character, this is the guy I want you to play. And the next day, Brad Pitt, Leonardo came back and said, oh my word, this guy, yes. Did you know, I want to do this, we can do it, I can take this. So like, he played the character, he didn't sort of play his version of the character, he did exactly, and I think that's what made this thing work so well.
Mm. For me, I know there's the arguments of, no, but each character should, you know, bring a little bit of themselves, should bring a little bit of themselves into the character. I don't believe they should
I
do
don't
that.
Believe that.
You're
either.
Portraying someone else.
You're
so
telling a story.
Be them.
Yeah. You're telling a story. That's why I know if Leonardo DiCaprio is going to be in a film, I'm like, this is going to be good.
And Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
The two of them are the same. And
he's such an old school
Quentin Tarantino,
actor.
Though. The fact that he was the first director to bring these two guys. Have they been in films together before?
Probably. I can't imagine why not.
But like, the fact that they are, because I feel like they're both as equal a lead as each other. I know Brad Pitt won for Best Supporting Role.
Yeah.
He won, I think it was an Oscar for this. But like, they were a duo. They literally were what you call a dynamic duo. Like,
can
the two
imagine,
of them together.
Can you just imagine watching them two act together?
Oh, it must have been... Well, watching it on, like, watching the movie was so, honestly,
I'm sure the production, I'm sure they got so many times at the end of a scene, people would have, applauded.
Yeah, stood up and applauded, because it was brilliant.
Like, wow, now I'm saying during filming.
No, yes.
Like, just, what? You know, type of thing.
Do you know that this film, though, so on set, I agree, but when it was first premiered, it got a 7-minute standing ovation afterwards. Seven-minute standing ovation.
Nah,
and
so
I would have
good.
Been there. Also, on top of that, so this film is, I think, what is it, 3 hours? It's 2 hours and 52.
Two and a half. But
no, it's three. It's closer to three than two and a half.
I believe it's 2 hours, 39 minutes. 37 or 39.
Do you know the original first cut by the editor was 4 hours and 5 minutes, right? This is the first movie I've ever gone, I wish I could watch that cut.
Yeah.
I want to see the 4 hour version of this film.
I would love to as well.
I'm not like,
just purely because it's like every shot, every
yes, it's intentional.
It's so rich. It's so tasty.
It's not just there to, you know, fill up screen time. It's not that. It's, it was so, I really wish they released the original uncut 4 hour version of this film, because I would watch it. I would so watch it. Even after watching the film again, I would rewatch everything. It was so good.
And what's crazy is that this is like, it's not a film where there's a lot happening.
Mm-mm.
You're just watching, two or three stories, right?
Yeah.
Like, just...
And even Margot Robbie's story is not... She doesn't have a lot of story
and it's not
to
like
her.
It's not like you quite understand.
No.
You know, okay, this actor's doing this, that actor's there, and they're telling stories, and you're just, like, watching it. It's not like you're like, okay, are these actors... Is this going to... You're just... watching the daily life of this person. I mean, and there's certain things that don't even add on to the story.
Yeah.
It's just there.
But you know what I love? I love how Quentin, he took a real life story and told it. You know, like, think about it. If the average person, right, most people, if they had told the story, even if they didn't want to kill Sharon Tate, what would they have done? They would have taken it from Sharon Tate's perspective. You would have followed Sharon Tate from the beginning.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm. And then she wouldn't have died in the end, and it would have just been a happy... He didn't do that. He had her in it, but it was told from the perspective of an actor who... basically represents the old way of how film was done with the westerns and that type of acting and that type of look, because those actors had a specific look. And then he took what Sharon Tate represented was like the new way of doing things in the film industry, you know, where it wasn't really the westerns, it was, you know, other type of films. And how what should have happened was she should have, you know, like, joined with the old way of film being brought together, and that would have, like, raised up the film industry, but that she was cut short of that because she was murdered. But instead of now doing that, he actually shows in Leonardo DiCaprio's character and her character coming together at the end what the film industry like could have been. Do you understand? But he told a story where he didn't tell the story. He instead he took the story and allowed another story to be created that then sort of told that story, fixed that story, but you had a whole other, you know, with Brad Pitt and with Leonardo DiCaprio, like that whole, it was just, he added his mind, the way Quentin Tarantino's mind works is like, you know how complicated Christopher Nolan's mind is? Mm. Like, Quentin Tarantino's mind's not complicated, but it's brilliant. It's like, the way he tells the story and like brings, even like, you know how Leonardo DiCaprio is the actor, Brad Pitt's the stunt double.
Yeah.
And what happens in movies, you have all, the stunt double does all the heavy lifting. Like, all of the heavy lifting is the stunt double. And then you just have the actor at the end come out and be like, yeah, that was me. I just like caught a building and like flew. Do you understand what I'm saying? But like, actually, it was the stunt double. And how at the end with the murders, Brad Pitt actually did all of the work. And then Leonardo at the end just came out with his flamethrower and was like, kill, die, sucker, and like took all the glory, you know, for the murders. But actually, like, even the way he did that, like, he showed how a stunt double and actor's relationship works.
Yeah,
like that, it, he just blows my mind. Like, honestly, it was brilliant. And even the song at the end of the film, that I didn't pick this up, this I got in research, but the song at the end of the film is a song from Judge. No, I'm lying. No, yes. The music after Cliff kills the intruders and the police arrive and Rick goes to meet Sharon Tate is from The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean, directed by John Huston and starring Paul Newman in the title role. And it's appropriate because the title card at the beginning of that movie is Maybe This Isn't the Way It Was, It's the Way It Should Have Been.
No.
Which is exactly what Quentin Tarantino is saying, is this is how it should have been. So, like, even that small detail is just, it's beautiful.
Mm.
It's like, also, I don't know if you picked this up, but you know when Margot Robbie goes to watch herself in cinema?
Yeah.
They obviously show the film that she's in, and I was watching it, and I was like, that's not Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
That is not Margot. It actually wasn't. That is the original Sharon Tate.
I thought that is
the actress that was murdered.
Yeah.
That was her in that whatever she was acting in.
I
was thought, like, who is that? Because at the time when I was, I don't know, did you know it was about Sharon Tate's murder?
I don't even know who that was.
You see, so the chick that was in that movie, she was actually murdered.
The one who was murdered. Yeah, so I was still looking closely. I'm like trying to find a resemblance.
He was like, what?
I'm like, is that her watching herself? Because I kind of didn't get when she got to, you know, there where she has to buy a ticket.
Yes.
And then, like, she didn't buy a ticket. So she's like, what if I'm in the movie? And then it was like, you mean, no, that's, okay, well, then that's who, that's me. And I was trying to, because you don't know much about her, because all you've seen is her moving around. And then I was just like, wait, is that her in the film? Is that really her in the film? Or was that her trying to sneak into a movie house without paying type of thing?
So that's what was happening there. Also, you know, there was a flashback where Rick Dalton is training to use the flamethrower.
Yeah, that's right.
Apparently, and then he recoils from the heat it generates.
Yeah, that's right.
That was Leonardo's genuine reaction to the flamethrower.
Oh, really?
And Quentin thought it was funny and then left it in the movie. So that's actually, that was him actually really reacting to the heat.
So the guy behind it was training and he was like, no, it's a flamethrower. So that was also him saying, no, dude, it's a flamethrower.
Must
have been,
hey? Yeah. Which is, and then also I loved how, so you know the hippie, the chick that plays, the hippies were weird.
They
were just so weird. But I enjoyed Austin Butler. You know Austin Butler who played Tex.
Yes,
he's Elvis. So, but I loved how, her name's Margaret Qualley. She played the hippie that Brad Pitt gets in the car. She puts her feet on the windscreen, which was really gross. But she had armpit hair.
I know.
She actually grew out her armpit hair. That's not like fake hair that they just like, you know, put on her arm. That was her actual. But I appreciated it because that's what hippies would have done, you know?
Crazy.
They were like really true to the. And then also, I thought this was so cool. So the Columbia Pictures release intro at the beginning of the film, right? That is authentic for the 1960s. It was recycled from an unknown Columbia Pictures film from the same period, and wasn't even remastered in order to keep it from its scratched, slightly faded look. The only nod to the modern times is the digital edition of the Sony name at the bottom of the screen. Sony acquired Columbia Pictures in the early 1990s, and as an additional piece, Columbia Pictures' television arm of the era, Screen Gems, is also name-checked in the film. Which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that opening Columbia Pictures logo was an original take of the 1960s. Like, original. Like, they just cut it out and, you know, put it in the film. Yeah. And then Ryan. First, maybe minute of the film. Wilhelm scream.
I heard it.
And it's cool, right?
Right there, I heard it.
Which is also...
It was like the first shot almost.
Yep. You're like, ah! That's also a thing that Quentin Tarantino does. He often puts the Wilhelm scream in... I think, I'm sure, maybe all of his films. Mm. But he does... Quentin Tarantino considers himself one of the luckiest directors in history of Hollywood to be able to cast Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt at the same time. So it's not the first time, it would be difficult to get the two of them.
What a brilliant cast.
Yeah, no, it was such a good cast. Even the little girl. You know the little girl that I'm talking about? She was brilliant as well. Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed that scene with her and Leonardo talking together. It was really good. And also, Leonardo DiCaprio was so eager to work with Quentin Tarantino again, and to keep within budget, he took a 25% pay cut from his usual $20 million salary just to be in the film. So Leonardo actually took a pay cut so that he could be in this in this movie. He obviously was in Django Unchained. That's the very famous scene where he breaks the glass and then cuts his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was...
That was before this, eh?
That was before this, yeah.
Yeah, so he definitely...
Wanted...
Yeah.
I would want to work with Quentin Tarantino. He's amazing. Yeah.
I would want Leonardo DiCaprio as an actor.
Definitely,
in my film.
Yeah. So Quentin Tarantino is also not a big fan of CG. So what they did was... They actually... There's a section of LA's Hollywood Freeway. It's called the US 101. It was completely shut down from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. for a sequence populated with period cars, because obviously they needed like the 1960s. I'm sure it was where Brad Pitt was driving along the freeway. And no VFX were used to create that sequence.
Right.
So they literally shut down the whole freeway, got only period cars onto the freeway, and then they filmed it like that.
It was about six blocks.
Yeah.
About six blocks that they used. They even changed to the postcards in the shops.
Even the signage.
And the signage.
The production designer, whoever that person was, they were so good. Because even the houses, even his trailer, he had a chessboard sticking out of one of the... I was just like, someone was like, we need a chessboard right there.
The one shot that I really loved was when Leonardo DiCaprio was in the pool. Floating on the top.
Yes.
I don't know if you noticed how exceptionally well lit it was.
Yeah.
And I was actually watching an interview like a long time ago with this other kid that did some 3D work, and that shot inspired him. And what he literally did was he shot it in the day. Doesn't know what they did in the film, but he looked at it and he thought it was like a day for night shot because of how well lit
it was.
Around.
Sure.
I was just re-looking at it again because the pool was like super nice and blue, and like the area around it wasn't in complete darkness. There was like quite a bit of light, so there's just look out for that shot. There's some cool work that was done there
with
the lighting.
And then okay, this is the last thing. There's so much to speak about this film. Like there's so much. There's this film It is definitely on my favorite film. This film is what a film is supposed to. This is a standard, people. If your film does not meet the standard, maybe you shouldn't release it. I'm just
saying. If it doesn't have the swearing in, that's
okay. Yeah, the swearing, no, but the everything else. That
just remove the swearing. This film, I would say,
it's perfect. Yeah. Perfect film. Mm. Perfect. So while scouting for locations, Tarantino visited the Lee Van Cleef's home. I don't know who that is, but he visited them. And while there, he noticed a giant poster of Van Cleef's face hanging in his own garage. And Tarantino thought this was both funny and strange and decided to give Rick Dalton the same thing in his driveway, which was that big picture of Leonardo DiCaprio, which was so funny. I remember that shot. You know how it starts? Yep. It's in the beginning of the film. It's not the beginning of the film, but it's in the beginning. That slow pan out of his face into the car, and then you see Brad Pitt and Leo get in, and then, like, I remember that so clearly, but that poster, imagine having a picture of yourself in your driveway. It's just so true to Hollywood, though, as well.
I think it is the Hollywood thing.
Yeah, it's so true, too.
Of that day. And the radio that was always playing the music, and they kept mentioning, this is KPM, and greatest. And then they would have the music, like, playing while they're driving, you know. It's really just, like, the whole
film's an experience. Even their choice of, like, the frame size, like, how they... You know, when it was the black and white 60s, like, interview, you know, there was, like, square on the screen. Mm. And then, like, the ratio, the way they changed the ratio and the color. And the color of the yellow. Mm. Like, the yellow was so... In the set design, like...
You talk about Brad Pitt's outfit.
Brad Pitt's yellow. But even Leonardo had the purple... Like, obviously, it was different shades of yellow. But yellow was so 60s. Yeah. It was so 60s. And then Margot Robbie's yellow outfits. And it was... It was brilliant. Costume design, brilliant.
The production designer even looked down, like, what Quentin really appreciated about the production design is that, so she lived in L.A. She understood the history and everything about it, where they even looked down to, so you'll see there's quite a couple shots where, like, the one actor would look out the window with the curtains. They would even go down to what curtains would a guy of from that background have in his windows, for example. The whole film.
Oh, and it must have been crazy. They had to reinvent the 60s. Like, that seems... I read a fact somewhere that the houses that they filmed in, at first when they wanted to put, like, fixtures on it to make it look more 60s, and apparently the owners weren't happy. They were like, nah. But eventually they got permission to do it. After filming, the owners didn't want to take the fixtures down because they liked what it did to the house. Yeah. And almost like it was accurate to the 60s time period, so they actually left those fixtures up.
Yeah.
So
something I also appreciate about the film is that today, if you listen to 60s music, you're like, yeah, 60s. But this film, the 60s music just felt so alive, hey?
You were just like, to live in the 60s. I wasn't even there. Don't even know what it was like, but to be alive in the 60s.
I love how at the one, at the Playboy Mansion, how they made the audio sound of the music. Mm. You could hear how it was playing over the loud music.
Yes.
Over the loudspeakers.
Yeah.
And the way they would die, like, it was just really well put together.
My last favorite thing about this film was the black Porsche.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it was beautiful. The vintage black Porsche that Margot Robbie got to drive. Yeah. I was like, that's a beautiful car right there. Yeah. No, this film, honestly, I can say it's definitely on my list of favorite films. And I actually want to go watch. I've watched three of Quentin Tarantino's 10 films. I want to go watch all of them.
Was Once Upon a Time in Mexico, was that?
No, that wasn't Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, damn it.
He did Kill Bill,
that's right.
Pulp Fiction. Kill Bill had Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Yeah, I've watched Kill Bill.
Jackie Brown.
That's pretty good.
Death Proof. The Hateful Eight was before Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't think I've seen that. Django Unchained I've watched. Yeah. And then Inglourious.
We actually did Django.
Mm. And Inglourious.
Yes. Inglourious dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot.
So go look out for those shows.
Yeah.
Mm.
And we have a good film coming next week. I have a funny story that goes with it.
So she's already got it?
I got it. Yeah. It found me. I did not find it. It literally found me.
So you want to... Truly
found me. But so, this has been the movie show.
on Active FM.
Until next week.
Cheers.
Hi, my name is Johan Kruger. I'm with Creation Ministries International, and you're listening to Active Affirm.